Hello, and welcome to my podcast, Sex, Love, and Addiction. This show was created to provide accurate expert information and support for those seeking insight into the painful realities of cheating and infidelity, sex and porn addiction, as well as the relationship between chronic drug abuse and paired sexual behavior, commonly known as chemsex. I'm your host, Dr. Rob Weiss, a licensed therapist, addiction specialist, sexologist, clinical educator, and author of 10 books on intimacy, addiction, sexuality, and relationship health. This podcast is a forum for discussing sex, love, and addiction in frank, fact-based, informative ways. My primary goal is to bring you clear advice, opinions, and feedback from some of the world's most renowned experts in human sexuality, trauma, addiction, mental health, and relationship intimacy. This show is sponsored by Seeking Integrity treatment programs, which are also dedicated to providing expert-focused, highly specialized residential treatment for men struggling with sex, porn, and related addictions. You can learn more about Seeking Integrity and my work there at www.seekingintegrity.com. Now let's get started. I did want to go back and say something that you said that I thought was really important, and it's true for both of you. I love this word agency. You know, to have agency in my mind means to be able to make the decisions for your own life and to have power over who you are and what you want to do. I have agency in my workplace that I have the ability to say, you know, I don't like that. I don't like your way you're treating it, that you value yourself in a way that you have power and control, for healthy power and control for yourself, boundaries, all of that. And one of the things I heard you say, and also Annie say, is I did not have agency over how my children found out. That, you know, Annie said, I think they should have known. I would have talked about it, but he threw it at them for his own reasons. I heard you say that there's yelling and shouting and upset in the middle of the night, and all of a sudden they know. And I guess I want to say to all of you that I certainly work with spouses who say, I'm so pissed at him, I'm just going to tell them, without any real regard to their, how that's going to affect them. And I wonder whether either one of you felt, you both said, I wish we had had the ability to frame this and organize this in a way that I knew would be helpful to my children, but you didn't have that chance in one way or the other.
That is correct. The thing is that it's so hard to see how this is going to come out. You trust your spouse, and it's something that you never expected to happen. So for me, I never expected to find what I found. I never expected that I would look at his phone and have a fight in the middle of the night. It just happened. And like Annie said, her husband decided to do it. Like we, you know, like you don't know what you don't know. And it happened. You can only, you know, hindsight's 20/20 or whatever they say. It's like, yeah, if you can have some control over it, have some control over it. If it happens, move on and make the best of a bad situation.
Who did you tell, Melissa?
I told a couple friends, a few friends, and I told one brother, and I actually told my mother. My mother doesn't remember. She has, I guess maybe it's lucky she has dementia for that, so she doesn't remember. My brother helps me with my mother, so I had to tell him because I was like, I don't know how I can handle our mother, and he was great about it. He actually, my husband thanked him for being there for me. And my brother actually said, no, thank you, because you brought us closer together. So it was great. A few friends are great and supportive, and a few friends who know disappeared. So that's also, you just don't know how people are going to handle it. And so you have to tread lightly. Oh, my sister-in-law also knows his sister who had to came in from California and helped me and felt betrayed too by him. So she was a great help for me.
Well, and I'll say too, even friends who I did tell and they were comforting and caring, I found that they weren't people that I could go and just, you know, tell everything. And you know, I had friends who loved me, but this topic in particular, it is sometimes impossible to take what is happening to you and what you're discovering and what you're learning to friends who aren't in this and don't experience this or haven't experienced this.
Why?
And so I think the societal taboo on talking about sex in general, you know, our society promotes it and then we're not allowed to talk about it. Especially in this regard, many of us have men who are pretty darn well known in their fields, you know, and so there's a lot of protecting of, for me, I'm only speaking for myself, there was a lot of protecting of his professional status, and I didn't feel comfortable talking about so much, you know, that could go elsewhere. Not that my friends are untrustworthy.
So you were protecting him.
Yeah, well, protecting our livelihood. He's the primary breadwinner, and I knew that if some of these details came out, I don't think he would have lost his job. I don't think he, but it would tarnish his reputation for the field that he's in and that he's well known in. So I knew my friends were trustworthy, but honestly, Dr. Rob, you can't go to your friend and go, guess what I discovered now? Like, at least I couldn't. I just felt like I couldn't. I didn't want to burden my friends with a lot of this, to be honest, you know, but two, there is that kind of taboo about talking about that porn is a problem, that masturbation can be a problem, that cheating happens, that, you know, and cheating comes in so many forms, you know, a lot of women have heard things they never thought that their husband could even be capable of. So there's some shame involved.
So I got to go back to that question, Andy, which is what's the big deal? It's just porn. And let's try this. Do you think it affected your intimate life? I don't want to talk about sex with you directly, but do you think this affected, I mean, when someone's going out and they're using their sexual energy on looking at images for 3 times a day, 4 times a week, or whatever it was, it can't, and they're full of lies and all that. I can't help but think it must have affected in very concrete ways the relationship that you had.
It definitely did. And that was the piece where I constantly thought, I'm not getting this right.
And I'm not attractive enough, and I'm not young enough, and I'm not thin enough. And
something's wrong with me. I'm not getting it right. I'm doing everything I can. It's still not getting better. We were like polar magnets in that department, you know? And sometimes it just, I mean, there was no emotional intimacy. And the way I'm wired is I need that before I have physical intimacy. And I know that my spouse is wired the other way. And that's what I thought was at play. I didn't know that there was this huge amount of shame that he was carrying, and that, I didn't know that it could harm one's sexuality to be addicted to sex. I never knew sex addiction was a thing. I never knew porn addiction was a thing. I know now, you know, and if I had known that then, I might not have thought it was me. But yeah, it definitely affected every aspect of our life.
Melissa, did you blame yourself?
Did I blame myself?
And the way Annie's talking about, like, if I had done this or that, you know, then he wouldn't
before
have.
Discovery.
Before discovery.
Mm-hmm. Right, before.
You know, when we were going through couples counseling, things got better. So I kind of did blame myself. Maybe, you know, like, oh, look how good we are together now. And we're being intimate. And everything is great. It was all fake. It was literally. So afterwards, for me, when I found out, I felt like I was damned if I did and I was damned if I didn't.
What do you mean?
I mean, like, before couples counseling, we were not being intimate. Then we started being intimate. And I'm like, it didn't matter. He was a sex addict if I had sex with him, and a sex addict if I didn't have sex with him. It didn't matter.
Well, he was a sex addict, and I say this to all of you, long before he met you.
100% long before yes. I want to go back to when you were talking about friends and knowing.
Yes.
And I think one of the big issues is you don't understand betrayal trauma until it happens to you. It is such a crushing trauma that people who are not in it don't understand it. That I didn't start really understanding there was so many people out there until I found your groups. My therapist said, try COSA, try Al-Anon. And it just didn't work for me. And then when I started going to your groups and talk about like strange things that I thought were innocuous things where people would bring up in groups, my husband walks in front of me. He never walks with me. And I was like, oh my God, mine does that too. Mm-hmm. I just thought that was him. Like, and finally, I didn't feel alone. I didn't feel like I was going crazy. And I think when you tell other people this is not happening and they don't have it, they don't understand it. I remember going out to lunch with a friend and trying to explain to her that I get triggers and I think I have PTSD from this. And she starts to tell me about a car accident and she has PTSD. And I'm like, okay, she's not getting this. She's really not getting this.
What do you mean?
She was not getting that like things that I thought were real in the past that are bringing stuff up in the future. And like when she told me about how, yeah, she can't drive on the street anymore because she has PTSD, I was like, you're not hearing me. It was just a weird interaction. I felt she was sympathizing and not empathizing, and she wasn't understanding it.
Well, and like you said, Melissa, you cannot understand the crushing blow that this is until you experience it. You know, even those of us who have been through it, it's so hard to describe. You know, we describe it as being shattered and in a million pieces. We describe it as bleeding out on the floor. We describe it as just going completely numb and can't do anything in life. And there's just so many ways to describe that moment. And those first few weeks, months, God forbid, years of just utter disbelief, brokenness, pain to the core. Like I can say that, and I know you can hear it in my voice, but if you haven't experienced it, you just don't know. And I agree. I had friends that were saying like, oh, I know. I've been through, you know, something completely unrelated, you know, and they try. Like that's a friend who's really trying, but you can't convey how devastating this is to someone who hasn't been through it. Now, the flip side of that is, when you start to find people who have, there's your people. And like Melissa said, you'll hear someone say, well, this happened to me. And suddenly I'm not alone. I'm not the only person that's happened to. What? You know, so the flip side of someone not understanding it is the people who have experienced it do understand, almost to the point where we don't even need to use words. We get one another. We are a community of women who just understand the pain that each of us has been through.
I've heard that some women will be in that blaming, I'm not enough, I'm not attractive enough, all of that stuff. And they go to one of these groups and they see a woman who is attractive and older and smart. And they look at her and they say, well, if that happened to her, then it isn't just about me. That relief that I'm not alone. And I guess, you know, without being too self-promoting, we offer about a dozen groups for free on Seeking Integrity. And what was the difference for you between that and going to some of the larger 12-step programs?
For me, I felt that in some of those 12-step groups, that I had to explain my part. And when you first find out, none of it's my part. And I it was just like, what do you mean my part? I literally just found out that my husband's lying to me for 20 years and I have a part. Now, 4 years later, I can understand, oh, there is a part, maybe a 1%, a 2%, I don't know what the percentage of a part of me not keeping my boundaries or not understanding sometimes I don't know even how I would have. They're so good, but I can have a part now and make sure that it doesn't happen again. Keep my boundaries, you know, work day to day, understanding, getting what I want, asking for what I want. I don't think I used to ask what I want. I think I would just be annoyed.
You know, I really want to say something to everyone listening, because I love that you said 1 or 2%. I love that you said it's been a long time before I can even look at my contribution to our relationship problems. I do want to say that there is no person on the planet, no matter what you do in your relationship, that can make somebody else do anything. Certainly this. And I will say, you know, I say this to all of the men. You can be unhappy and go to therapy. You can be frustrated and go volunteer. You can be completely miserable in your relationship and you can divorce. But the choice to go off to other women or other situations to avoid my unhappiness, that choice is mine and mine alone. I mean, you, Melissa, or Annie, you can make us miserable. You can make us unhappy. You may have a part in the relationship unhappiness, but in the choice to act out and be with other women, or even for the alcoholic, the choice to drink is mine and mine alone. So I just wanted to take a little bit off of you because, yeah, I'm sure you have, we all have issues that play into the problems in our relationships, but there's nothing that either one of you could have done to cause this.
No, and I agree with Melissa on, you know, 12-step. I'm actually a proponent of 12-step. I'm in a 12-step program for myself. 100% believe that it is worthy and wonderful. But the ones that I found myself in related to sex addiction felt very blaming, felt very, you know, focused on, well, you know, what, like Mel said, what was your part? And I remember sitting, I went to 3. I'm like, okay, I'm going to try to give this a chance. And I just remember sitting there and looking around the room and thinking, is everyone taking this in and actually believe it? So it's working for some women and that's great. If it works for you, go. It just didn't work for me to hear that I had a part in what had happened. So I needed to find something else. And so there was another kind of betrayal. Like I was told to go to this and then it harmed me further in my opinion. So
you got to find your place.
Yes. And like I said, when we find our place with other women who understand, that's our place.
You know, it's funny. I'm sorry. It is not funny. But when I encourage a woman to go to one of the groups at Seeking Integrity and be with other women, and there are different groups, like women whose kids are grown and gone is a particular group. Women who are leaving their relationship is another group. And there are groups for addicts. But I've heard women say, and I went to that meeting and those women are all a mess. And those women just, they can't tolerate their lives. And I'm not like that. And I think the part is they don't want to see themselves as that. They don't want to identify with someone whose life is falling apart. And that's a really, really tough one, because then you have to look at yourself and say, look what has happened to me. So a couple of quick questions. I know we're taking a lot of time, but I also know, and I really believe this, that there are people, and mostly women, but listen to this, by the way. My experiences with the show is that women will listen to this, feel deeply connected and understand, maybe for the first time, what has happened. And then they throw the podcast at their spouses and say, you listen to this. But I know that the women who are listening to this, maybe they can have some grace. Maybe they can realize that despite all that's happened, that they didn't make this happen. It's not their part. What was missing in the relationship, maybe they just thought that's what relationships were. I do want to say one more part about how children are harmed. And the way children are harmed, despite how active a man has felt he was with his kids, like he said, he took them to games, he did their homework, he, you know, went camping, whatever that was. And the men will say to me in treatment and Seeking Integrity, they'll say, you know, I wasn't a very good husband. I just wasn't. I did this and that, but I was a good dad. You know, I really showed up for my kids and all of that. And I have to say to them, boy, do they hate this. How can you be a good father when you're not supporting their mother? How can that mother feel safe, comfortable, not anxious, and be able to give everything that she has to her children when she's all alone in it and you haven't shown up for her?
Dr. Rob, my CSAT, I had a wonderful CSAT just for me. And she said to me, you know how you were trying to crack the code for 29 years? Your children were also trying to crack the code. They also didn't know what was off and different. And they have been able to, as adults, identify some things that they now can say, okay, that makes sense now. that makes sense that dad was so controlling about this, that, or the other thing. He was hiding. He was desperate that his secret would not be found. So he used control as a you know, means. So they're trying to crack the code, whether they know even the whole story or not, they know something's off for sure. And if he can't be emotionally connected to me, he's not truly emotionally connected to his children. You can take a kid to a game, but they don't feel like you're really there or whatever.
I have one more question for Melissa, and for you, Melissa, and then I want to move on to how you got here, how we ended up having this conversation between the two of you, what your relationship means to each other. So, because I, you know, I'm on this with you for a reason. These are not, and just to say it to you guys, these are not random people who I knew had this issue and said, hey, lady, or hey, guy, come up and talk as a partner. I knew that these women were sharing something that was profound enough to want to have both of them here. And I do want to talk about that before we stop, but I have two questions for, well, I have three. What is a CSAT? You mentioned it, but you didn't say what it was. I think, Annie, you brought it up a number of times.
I did, yes. Certified sex addiction therapist? Question mark? That's so funny.
Good job.
We use the term all the time, and I haven't spelled it out in a very long time.
So, and I want you to know that I was part of the development of that training. And I guess I want to say this to you and to all of you, just because someone knows a skill doesn't mean they know how to do it. And I have met a lot of CSATs who are very well trained and understand the nature and the tasks that need to be carried out. But they come from a very, well, what's going on and how are you doing and what happened to you when you were young? And they don't understand that therapy for this is very directive. You need to do this. You need to do that. I want you to come back and tell me that you did this or did that, that this is the nature of working with addicts, that while we have compassion and care for them, we understand that their job is to grow and learn. It's kind of like going to school. If you don't study, you're not going to grow. And that's very different than self-reflection. And I don't know if that was your experience. I kind of heard it with the couples work.
That was definitely our experience. So my husband, you know, was told you need a CSAT. He went to a CSAT. And for the first 2.5 years of this experience, nothing was changing in the home. He was sober. He wasn't acting out. He, you know, he was going.
As far as you know.
As far as I know, yes. It to me, the evidence showed that he wasn't acting out. He wasn't, you know, using his drug, so to speak. But nothing was changing in our relationship. In fact, it almost was getting worse. Like he was getting more defensive. Like I said earlier, he was being more short with me. And that was when I was doing the begging, can I please go, you know? So finally, I know I heard Melissa earlier say, drew a line in the sand. My line in the sand was over a CSAT who was not effective. And I said, on one day I had had it. And I said, I'm done unless you fire this person and find someone who is able to really do this work. And my husband's comment to me was, but I like talking with him. And I knew in that one statement that it wasn't what you were just describing. They were getting together and they were hanging out and they were chilling and they were talking, which in some instances can be helpful.
After.
But it was, yes, it was not helpful to get him to understand the depths of what his behaviors and relationship were doing to me. So,
and I want to say to all of you, the response is often, well, it's my therapy. And why are you interfering? And the whole point of my going to therapy is to have confidentiality. And you know, the truth is you don't have to enter therapy with him or her. You can leave a message on the phone. Let me tell you everything that's going on with me. You can leave emails. You can be asked to join the therapy. You don't have to keep your nose out completely. We use a word for family members. We call you collaterals, which is someone who can come in and confirm outside of the person we're seeing a reality that we may not know about. And sometimes I experience therapists closing the door because this is our special relationship and spouses aren't invited in. But I got to tell you, and I don't know if you, Melissa, it's been your experience, but we lie. I've had therapists say to me, oh, well, he never did this. He never did that. And the way his wife is treating him, well, especially in group. And everyone says, oh, you poor person, your wife must be terrible. You know, she must give you. And they don't understand that these people are coming in lying. And they're painting a picture of their relationship and of the situation that makes them look better or makes them look like it wasn't their fault or all of that stuff. And by the way, I said to Annie earlier, and I want you guys to hear this, and I didn't mean to in any way harm her or break her heart. When she said he's been sober for 2.5 years, my response is always, well, as far as we know. And that isn't to hurt her, let her down, or disappoint her, but this is the reality of what partners live with, is once again, I don't know when you walk out that door or lock that door in your office, what's really going on. And I guess to both of you, does that, and I really promise I'll tie this up, does that ever go away? That feeling of I don't know if I'll ever be able to trust you. I mean, Melissa, what is that?
Just came up in therapy the last week where I was on therapy with my therapist this morning talking about it, where sometimes I feel that my husband thinks, when is she going to get over this? And I reminded him that look at the way I react to things now as I did 4 years ago, that it's not the same, but it's not perfect. And that, am I ever going to get over it? I don't know. I mean, it's not going to be the trust that I had before, the blind trust that I had. It can't be. I feel like, and it's sad that I kind of have to be a little bit on my toes. Maybe I'm not on ballet toe point anymore, but I'm still somehow not 100% trusting. And he does say to me, you don't trust me. And I get it. And I'm like, yeah, how do I do this?
And to you spouses who are listening, you know, the truth is that I think what Melissa's saying is the naive belief, which I think you should have until you have been here heard opposite, that you would never hurt me, that you understand when you go out that door that your job is to protect the family, to watch out for the family, and you would never knowingly go out and do something that you know would hurt me and you did it anyway. Once you have that knowledge, you can't take it back.
As far as the trust, I will say I want to. I look for evidence that says that I can. And that comes in the form of him being honest with me, him being forthcoming with things. We have a boundary of if anything does happen, he has 24 hours to disclose to me. You know, I want to trust him because I want to see his growth. But there's always going to be a part of me on the lookout. And I will say what I had to grow was my self-trust. I need to trust myself to know what I know and what I'm seeing and not put it on myself. I will be very honest. We had a recent relapse.
And what is a relapse for people to understand what that means?
Acting out with the behavior that got us here in the first place. Well, he broke the 24-hour rule, and he waited quite some time to tell me. But in that time that I, quote, didn't know, I knew. Again, I was saying, something's off. What's off? This is weird. Something doesn't feel right. Now, I wasn't thinking immediately, you've relapsed, you know. I was just feeling something. I was sensing something. So I was trusting myself to say, what's going on? So about 30 days into me not knowing, I said, okay, here's what I'm seeing. Maybe this is what's off. I'm seeing your recovery work kind of get watered down. You're not doing as much. You're not telling me as much about your recovery. You're not telling me about conversations you've had with your fellows. You're like, mate, and he goes, you know, I think you're right. I think you're right. I think that's it. I'm going to up my game. And he did. He did. He started going to a daily meeting that he hadn't been going to. And he was getting up an hour early, which is really hard for him. But he was doing it. And he was devoting himself to doing this. But he still hadn't told.
And I want to say to everybody that what makes the difference for, I think, these women and everyone that I've worked with is not anything that the addict says. And I hope that they realize that what matters, and Annie is talking about, is action. Do I see, and I tell the guys, you know, put a note on your refrigerator and say Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, this is what I'm going to be doing, so that your spouse can look in the room or realize, oh yeah, it's about regaining trust is about honest behavior and committed behavior over time. It's nothing that you say. And I don't know if you experienced, Melissa, but I hear this so often. Why don't you just get over it? I mean, you can see how hard I'm working. Why can't things get better? And of course, my thought is, well, you did this for 20 years and you want them to get over it in 20 weeks. But have you had any of that?
Well, it's not so much those words, but I get sometimes the words, my feelings don't matter, or, you know, what about me? And like I said before, look at the incremental difference of me when I found out to now. There's definitely a change.
I have two more things for you. Three, actually. And when I say that, it's usually five, but I'm going to try really hard. So can either of you explain the term ambivalent love? Because I think it's something that drives a lot of partners crazy. And has it affected you?
Rob, I'll tell you, I've done work with someone else in the trauma field, and we actually refer to it as ambivalent trauma. So there's that period of time where I knew something was wrong. I couldn't put my finger on it. You know, so that's the beginning of it, is that, and that's traumatic to be enduring all these years of what is going on, what is going on. Now, I will say, after discovery, after knowing what was going on, there is this, it's a dichotomy. Here's this person I trusted the most in the world and want to spend my life with, who also did the thing that has harmed me the most in my life. And yes, I can look at him and I can see the man that I married and that I love, and, you know, and then one little tone comes out of him or one glance and I'm like, ah, you know, there, you know. So yes, there is, I think at the beginning, it's weighted one way. Like all I could see in the beginning of this was this person who harmed me. And I could not comprehend ever forgiving him for it or accepting, you know. And then almost six years in, we're almost at the 6-year mark. It's weighted the other way. He's healing, he's growing, he's working hard. He's, you know, even with relapse, relapse happens. I want to get a t-shirt, relapse happens. But he's doing everything he can to be better. And he tells me every day, I want to be better. So it's weighted the other way. I can now look at him with love and compassion. That was the kicker for me, was learning to have compassion for him. Seeing him not as someone who intended to harm me, but someone who had been harmed himself and was acting out of that. And to say, this is him protecting him, his own pain in addiction, which I think is universal. There's a pain, there's something they want to numb. They find any addiction, in my opinion, this is the world according to Annie. And so when I could finally see that, when my hurt had lessened, when I had healed some, I was then able to look at him and go, oh my goodness, what it took to get you to this point. I'm so sorry that all these things happened to you. Now that's a long time coming, but definitely there's an ambivalence. Definitely there's a, who are you? First of all, you know, there's an existential crisis. Like, who are you? You're not the person I thought you were. But then the scale can tip with healing and work and hard work and me working on me. It's not just the addict that needs to do all this work to heal. The work is different.
But the work is different. And I want to say that to everyone. For the addicts, it's do this, do that, look at this, understand how you've distorted reality, see how you've caused harm, find other ways to avoid this when it comes up for you. For the spouses, it's nothing like that. It's grief. It's finding peace with what I lived with. It's trying to understand how I could have looked more closely, or what I missed, and how I can come to peace with that. I think for spouses.
Yes. And it's restructuring everything you thought you knew into what you now know, and making that choice. Not everyone chooses to stay, and that's okay. Sometimes the restructuring is, I've got to move on my own. You happen to be talking to two people who chose to stay. But for every one of us that stays, there's someone who chooses not to for their own reasons. And that's okay. That's part of their restructuring of their life post-destruction.
So So Melissa, I'm going to ask you a question I don't want you to answer. And the reason I don't want you to answer is because I want women to look for the answer in some of those support groups that matter. And this is a question that I think is a very one that some of these folks understand. It is free. We do it to support you. We don't expect to get paid. We understand, I think, that, and I want to say this to you, to both of you, you're very privileged. You've had the opportunity to pay for therapy, to pay for inpatient, to pay for groups and, you know, things that do cost. And so many people don't have the opportunity to do that. They don't have the money, they don't have the resources. And so I think one of the things that happens in those groups is that you don't need a therapist to learn. You don't need a therapist to grow. You don't need a therapist to come to peace with this. And that is one of the things I want you to talk about when we're not here. The other thing I was going to bring you to Melissa, actually was, and you can't answer this, it's a secret question, which is why do people leave? And what would be the determinant? And it may be different for everyone, but there's a general reason, I think, where someone says, I'm done, I can't take this anymore. And I'm not talking about in the first, you know, hour or days, I'm talking about over time. That they say, you know what, I just can't do this anymore. And what is the experience of that person? I'm sure it's different for lots.
I was going to say, I can't answer why people leave, but I can say that why I would leave is that if I saw consistent, repeated behavior of my husband not working daily and still getting the lies and the manipulation and the gaslighting, that would be my reason for leaving. I have strict boundaries for leaving. And if I saw these things, I would leave. I'm here for me now, and I cannot live my life with someone who is not trying to better themselves. I see that, you know, one thing we were talking about, ambivalent love. And one thing for me that was really important is to reframe my husband's addiction, where he wasn't a cheater and he wasn't going to say he has an intimacy and attachment disorder. And that's the way I have to look at it. And I had to, and I still do, it's something that started in childhood and it was not me. It was not my fault, but he knows what he did wrong and he has to work at it every day. And if he doesn't work at it every day, then I would leave. I would leave if I saw that he wasn't doing what he needed to do to better our life, his life, and all of our lives.
So here's the question. Thank you, Melissa, because I think that does round out how each person has to look at their own lives and make decisions. But I do want to ask both of you, okay, here's another question that you can't answer, and you can't answer it, which is, I've worked with women who say, if he does this again, I'm leaving. And okay, you can't answer that one. And what would you say to that woman? What would you say to the woman? And I've sat in groups. In fact, this particular group I mentioned, where I was going around the group and a woman who's fairly new to this and the whole thing said, if he does this again, I'm leaving. And then six women around the group, I had that woman who mentioned, who I'll never forget, said, you know, he can screw up, but I'm not going to mess up my life because he screwed up. And so each of them made different decisions based on the same set of circumstances. And I would love you, when they find you, and they will, to ask those kinds of questions that we're not going to answer now. So here's the last piece for you. I sense in talking to you guys, and I don't think I'm fairly off the mark. And by the way, I don't know these women in any particular meaningful way before we did this. I get this great sense that you love each other, that there's great affection and compassion, that you are two women who at an older age, let's say over, I'm going to say, I'll be honest, like over 40, it's hard to find friends. It's, you know, you're not in college. You maybe don't have young kids. You don't have that opportunity to build relationships. And usually we do run intense experiences no matter where we are in life. Have you made a difference in each other's lives? And how did you come to have this care for each other? How'd you meet?
Me first.
Okay.
I always say I will never be grateful this happened to me, but I'm grateful that because it happened to me, I have made friends that I never would have made. And Melissa is one of those. She and I live on opposite coasts of this country. I don't think we could be much further apart geographically, but she is one of the people in this world that I feel closest to at all times. She is there for me whenever I need her. She's a friend who reaches out when she senses something's off. Like, we have this just bond that I truly feel is one of the most important in my life, for sure.
And how did you meet her?
I met her through the network called We Tong Glen that Melissa is the founder of, and I'll let her talk about that. So I met her through community about betrayal trauma.
And a community of like-minded women who needed each other.
Yes, 100%.
My only regret about our relationship, which is, Annie's more eloquent than I am, is that we don't live on the same coast, that we have never met in person, because we would be together every single day. There's not a day that we don't talk to each other. If we don't text or talk, or we're in groups and we chat, it is a relationship that we will cherish for the rest of our lives, that it's, we are bonded.
Melissa, I wanted to thank you. You mentioned We Tong Glen, and can you spell that?
WETONGLEN. So it's WeTongGlen.com. It all started out of going to your groups and people asking
Seeking
for
integrity.
At Seeking Integrity groups, the betrayed partner groups. And women were asking, where do I find this? Where do I find this? And everything's all over the place. There wasn't one central location to find things. And it was like, how can we do this? So myself and another woman who's also on the other coast, actually, she's now in the middle of the country. She moved. She's a techie. And the two of us came together and we started this online group that is, it has resources, articles every day. It has dropping groups. It has links to all the betrayal groups that you have. We have a gratitude group on Fridays that we just talk about gratitude, and we do not talk about our spouses. And if we run out of time, we have extra time. We always talk about food. Annie has a group on there called Worth. She can talk about it, an amazing dropping group. And it has just grown. And the thing that I just discovered about We Tong Glen, it started as a place for resources, but now people tell me, thank you. I have met, like Annie and I have met there. People have met their people and have formed groups and have their connections. And that is the most amazing thing that has come out of it. And there's probably, I think, over 2,500 women on there. It's for women only.
Yeah, I want to say something about We Tong Glen because it is such an amazing resource. And one of the reasons is I heard about it and I knew what you were doing. And I thought, well, I want to learn. I really want to hear what's being said and I want to make a contribution. So I'm going to sign up. And I went through, it's sort of like, signing up for Best Buy. I have to be a member in order to get the discount, So I went and I was typing something up and a little sign came up and said, we're really sorry, but you're a man and we don't invite men into this organization for particular reasons so that women can come together in a safe way. And I really admire that. I really, really admire, because I don't know who it was. I think it was you, Annie, who said the men get all the attention. The men are the ones who are struggling with the issue and they get all the focus and we're left alone trying to figure out what the heck happened, what truck, rolled over me. And I don't want to go in detail, but Annie, you too?
Yeah, I think We Tong Glen has changed that. We do now have a place to go. We do now, I know when I came into We Tong Glen, we were 2.5 years into this thing. I hadn't found anything until then. We're now here, women coming in within hours of their discovery. They are coming in that shattered state, and we know how to, deal with them. So, and, Melissa mentioned Worth. There was this great request from many women in there to really focus on our growth, on how we grow in this and in spite of this.
And your role models.
Oh, well, thank you. I you have to give it away to keep it. I really live by that. And so I developed Worth, which stands for Women Owning Resilience and Trauma Healing. And we only talk about ways we heal and modalities that help us heal and how we can come together as a community and heal.
So how can people reach you if they want to reach you? They want to reach out, either one of you. They want to talk to you. They want to gain information. I'm guessing Lee Tonglin, but I just wanted to check it out. And I'm waiting for the two of you to write your book, by the way, because it is absolutely, you heard that, right? I'm a pusher. Mm-hmm. I'll help you to organize it. I'll help you create, you know, and I'll help you push it out there. But there are so many people that, well, anyway, I'll let that go. But how do people reach you if they want to really, you know, check in with either one of you in real time?
On We Tonglin. We Tonglin actually has a chat feature where you can chat. I can be found either at the We Tonglin handle or Melissa Sunflower. It's an emoji sunflower.
Oh, I thought that was a website. Oh, sunflower. No. You are a sunflower emoji.
Yes. So it says Melissa with a sunflower emoji. Yes, because there's probably other Melissas on there.
Yeah, I would agree that through We Tonglin is really the best way to connect with either of us. And I can be found because I'm connected to Worth on there, and I'm Annie M on We Tonglin.
I also want to tell you that there are, and I'm guessing because I can't fully get in, but there are probably, my guess is there are books that are recommended for you to read. There are either podcasts or YouTubes that you're going to find resources that go beyond the relationships. But I think that these women have cultivated information that really makes sense and that reflects the reality that they're going through. And I bet you can find some of that on We Tonglin as well. I just want to say to both of you that it is just such an honor. You know, I was in this field when partners got blamed consistently over until the early 2000s. You know, what's wrong with them? They're so this and they're so that. And the reason was we were listening to the addicts. We didn't hear your voice. And they said how awful and how difficult. And, you know, and we believed them. And so, number one, I, for all my whole field, I want to offer you a sincere apology and a hope for an amends at some point for us not understanding. By the way, all the people who wrote about this, all the people who started the groups about this, all the people had articles and site, we're all men. And so, of course, we couldn't have understood what was going on because we weren't focused on the women. And everything you do has opened a door for that. And I wish that we'd been able to go back and fix that. I will say that I'm also honored to have a voice on We Tonglin, even though I can't go. And I think you've embraced codependence as a means of validating your feelings without blaming yourselves for what you've been through. And again, I feel honored that you've invited me into your world. So thank you, everybody, for listening. I think and I hope that you cannot miss in all of this the hope and the hope for change, the hope for growth and the hope for healing, regardless of the outcome that these women bring. And you can actually find them and talk about them. Thank you, Annie. Thank you, Melissa, for taking your time.
And thank you for everything you do.
Hi, this is Dr. Rob again. Thank you for joining us today. If this show has inspired you to seek further information for yourself or someone you love, I encourage you to visit our treatment center website, which is www.seekingintegrity.com. There you'll find some useful information about the residential treatment we provide, which I think is some of the best, most useful, short-term effective intensive care you can find for sexual addiction and compulsivity, as well as combined drug sex or chem sex problems. On seekingintegrity.com, you can find some useful advice and direction for healing. And don't forget, if you want to write me about this podcast or reach any of my guests, please write me at rob@seekingintegrity.com. I really look forward to our next time together. Take good care.